gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the getting down to business of free speech, because today in this show, we're just going to get down to business, no silly jokes. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719, extension. No extension. Operators are standing by. And so is Mark Collett. No, Mark Collett. Mark, is there anarchy in the UK?
There is anarchy in the UK, and it's anarchy born out of the failings of multiculturalism and mass immigration. Obviously, last week on Monday, there was the horrific stabbing and murder of three little girls. Eight other children were wounded and injured. Two adults were also wounded and injured. And this was all at the hands of a teenager, almost a man. He's the killer turns 18 on Wednesday of this week. So he was very close to being an adult. However, the way the press are describing him, you know, is scandalous. The press are running full defense for this monster. They're calling him, I'm going to read it, just read it out. This is the Daily Mail. Quiet choir boy, 17, accused of murdering three girls at Southport dance class, has been diagnosed with autism and hadn't left his house or spoken to his family for a period of time. You know, they keep calling him a boy, a Welsh boy, a Cardiff boy, a choir boy. You know, the press are running defense from this is a 17-year-old teenager, almost a man, you know, days away from becoming 18, who killed three white British girls, little British girls, in cold blood. In cold blood, we're being told nothing in terms of supposed motivation. We're being told nothing in terms of, you know, his family history or really anything meaningful about him, other than lots of good stuff. We're being told that he was a choir boy, that he was quiet, that he was thoughtful. And this has caused absolute outrage. Now, immediately after the killing, Keir Starmer ended up in Southport laying flowers. He was immediately heckled by members of the public who started shouting, "How many more children must die?" People are directly linking this, obviously, with mass immigration, with multiculturalism, with the kind of society that pushes people together and naturally that leads to this kind of horror taking place. And this, the first thing to really say is this is horrific, and this is something that has caused absolute outrage. But I don't think it's caused outrage on its own, which might seem like a strange thing to say. But this, you know, if you looked at it dispassionately, this is just another in a long line of atrocities aimed at white Brits. So just the week before, a white British soldier was attacked outside a barracks in Britain, a barracks in Kent in Britain. And this white British soldier was brutally stabbed by a black man. So this comes from a week on after a stabbing. Last year, we had the Nottingham attack, where a black man, again, went on a rampage in Nottingham, killing three people. And he was then very quickly diagnosed with some kind of mental deficiency or low IQ. It was diminished responsibility. And he disappeared into the system. And we were told that he could be out of jail in as little as 2 years, because he was put into a medical institution. And it was basically stated it was manslaughter, which is, in your term, second degree murder, on the basis of diminished responsibility and the fact that he had some kind of, you know, episode and he wasn't of sound mind. And because of this, he did this horrific thing, and that be the end of it. You know, that's it. That's it, guys. Nothing more to say. Please go home now. The show's over. Then we had the horrific Manchester Arena bombing, which killed, I believe, over 20 people. That was, again, a refugee, Salman Abedi, who targeted little girls after an Ariana Grande concert in Manchester. He was obviously, again, a migrant, that time a Muslim. And this is again and again and again and again. And I think there was something about this particular case that really caused outrage. There was something about this case that just struck a raw nerve with people. You know, this tension, this pressure, this oppressive multicultural society has been weighing on white Britons for a long time. And anybody who had any common sense would have said, look, this was always going to come. This was something that was always going to come. It was building and building. But when it did come, it wasn't just with a whimper. It was with a roar. And the whole country has basically gone up in flames. There have been riots all over the country. There have been attacks on mosques. There's been attacks on police. Two police stations in one city have been burnt out, you know, gutted by people who have attacked them. And it's basically the result of a government or successive governments that simply have not listened to the concerns of British people. Normal British folk have these concerns. They've had these concerns for a long time. They've been saying for a long time that they want an end to mass immigration, that there should be, you know, stop the boats, just stop the boats has been a battle cry of white working class people who are just fed up with the way things are going. But the governments, I keep saying governments because, you know, Tory and Labour alike have just ignored this, you know, and that has led to this explosion in civil unrest. Now, I've called for people to peacefully protest. Sadly, the protests haven't been peaceful. There has been plenty of flashpoints. There have been plenty of running battles with police. But the media is again being disingenuous. The media are calling these people far-right thugs. They're not far-right thugs. They are normal people who have just snapped. These are normal people who have had enough, who have said we don't want any more of this, that this is the final straw, and they have absolutely snapped. And they've snapped for good reason, because where people are tending to take to the street, you know, these are people who for years have put up with the grooming scandal. They've put up with their daughters being targeted. They've seen young lads get stabbed by ethnic gangs. They've had to witness, you know, cities become places where whites are now a minority. They've seen these machete attacks. You know, every day on social media there are videos of young black youths running down the street having pitch battles with machetes and giant knives. And I think people have just said, this is just too much to bear. We cannot cope with this anymore. We don't want this anymore. And it's almost as if, you know, if you've got like a toy with a spring in it, the further you push it down, the more it springs back when you finally release it. And I think this is a case of white working folk being pushed down, pushed down, pushed down, pushed down. And finally, the spring has had enough and it's gone shooting back. And I think the establishment are shocked by this. I think they don't understand why this is happening on such a wide scale. But I obviously, you know, I'm going to leave it here because I've said quite a lot and I don't know if you've got questions. But one thing that has to be said next is the establishment's response to this, because the establishment's response has been shocking. They've completely failed to read the room. They're more or less demonizing all white people. And, you know, I think the establishment are going to use this as a way to effectively, you know, delegitimize or even outlaw all forms of protest in this country by white people. And it will be an absolute, this will absolutely be done on a racial level.
Well, so I do have some questions. And, you know, obviously this is, even to say that it's the straw that breaks the camel's back, it's like a really horrific straw that's broken a camel's back. You wouldn't have this kind of response if you had had 70 years of immigration and decades of multiculturalism and everything had worked just fine. And then all of a sudden something like this happened, you wouldn't get the massive riots. You get the massive riots because you've had indignation after insult after injury. You mentioned the whole litany of grievances from the grooming gangs to the regular stabbings on the street, and of course you've got your whole I mean, even to the psychological attack, which manifests itself in many ways, such as the Christmas advert. So we've got that all. Regarding what's going on right now, and you know, it's clear that there's going to be an attempt to vilify whites in general and to clamp down on whatever means they have to resist the mass immigration and multiculturalism. But one thing I want to ask is the message that's being sent by the protesters, the messaging of the protesters, is it more anti-mass immigration? Is it more anti-Islam? Obviously, a big element of the migration over the decades, if not the majority, maybe probably the plurality at least, is Muslim migration. But this one individual was not a Muslim, but he was the child of, I guess, 1990s era African migrants, refugees from Rwanda, perhaps. So what's the messaging of the protesters themselves? Is it more anti-immigration, anti-Islam, or something else?
I think primarily it's a massive strike back against multiculturalism in general. That means it's a cry against mass immigration, it's a cry against Islam, it's a cry against white people becoming a minority. People are sick of it all. They don't want any of this. They don't want any of this happening. And they haven't wanted it for a long time. There's always been this talk of this silent majority of like people who fundamentally get on with life, even though they don't agree with what's going on. You know, they just take it on the chin. And over time, those people have been ground down and ground down. And in recent times, there's been a lot of trouble over migrants, specifically migrants that have crossed the channel illegally in what are known as small boats. And one of the big rallying cries from people has been recently, stop the boats. You know, people don't want it anymore. They want an end to this never-ending flow of migrants that keep just crossing our southern border illegally. And not only do they cross the border illegally, but they essentially get ferried here by the lifeguarding service. So they leave Calais in small boats, they get out into the channel, and the British lifeboats pick them up and ferry them over here. It's essentially like a ferry service. And then when they get here, there's ambulances on the dock waiting for them, there's towels, there's warm blankets, and there's a fleet of vehicles to whisk them away. And where do they whisk them to? Well, they whisk them to these, you know, in some cases, 4- and 5-star hotels where they're put up at our cost. These people are then given spending money. They have all their expenses paid for because they're staying in a hotel every night. You know, it's full board, so they're getting, you know, breakfast, lunch and dinner provided. There's a laundry service. And in some cases, as I've said, these aren't just your travel lodges or your premier inns. In some cases, these are actually stately homes and castles that British people would pay good money to go and enjoy a holiday in. You know, that is how it works. You know, these people are being put, you know, in no expenses spared accommodation. And that's costing the British taxpayer £8 million per day. So at a time when British people are really struggling, people are having to tighten their purse strings, you know, you've got people, you know, using food banks at a record rate. One of the first things the Labour government did was come in and say, we're cancelling the winter fuel allowance for people this year. So, you know, if things are tight, well, stuff you can pay for your own fuel over winter. You know, you deal with the inflation, general public, you know, when it comes down to it, it's not our problem. That's literally what Labour did. But at the same time, they can find millions a day to, you know, house these migrants in absolute opulence, and people are outraged by it. They've just had enough. And then this happens. You know, it's not bad enough. It's not just bad enough that we have to bear the indignity of seeing these people coming over, putting them on a pedestal, giving them everything. But then our children, you know, suffer in this way. And I think it was the innocence of those who were attacked this time. Little girls on their summer holiday, you know, at a dance class, you know, enjoying themselves. And that really hit home with people. And it really hit home with people in a way that it could never hit home with members of parliament. You see, I've got a 5-year-old daughter, and we go to events similar to this event that was taking place in Southport. In my area, there's an event that takes place in the city centre called the Princess Walk. And you go into the city centre and there's girls, young ladies, dressed up as Disney princesses. They're dressed up as Belle from Beauty and the Beast. They're dressed up as Rapunzel, as Elsa from Frozen. And, you know, you take your little girl down there, there's free face painting. And once they've had their faces painted, they go and sit on the knee of the princesses and you have a picture taken with them. And the princesses sing songs. And these are things normal people do. You know, these little girls are at a Taylor Swift dance class where their parents had said, look, it's the summer holidays. Put on a princess dress, go and sing and dance your heart out to Taylor Swift songs, you know, in a little community centre or a little dance hall somewhere, the kind that only working people know exist, the kind that, you know, smell of cheesy children's feet and have, you know, old crash mats in the corner that are all dusty and cracked. And that's what normal people understand. And they take, you know, they don't have a lot of money. And, you know, they put some money together to send their kids to something like this to entertain them for the day. And so they have a nice summer holiday. And then their kid gets stabbed to death. And then these politicians come out on the news. And these politicians are shedding more tears over a wall getting pushed over outside a mosque by white protesters than they are about these girls who are dead. And when it comes down to it, people just snapped. People just went mental. Because they just couldn't take it anymore. They couldn't take these double standards. And, you know, the politicians don't understand this because I just described what these dance studios are like, these events that, you know, normal little girls go to, that normal parents send their kids to. But I can tell you this, none of these politicians send their little girls to dance classes like that. They'll all send their kids to ballet lessons, to tap lessons, to dance studios in lovely areas of the city, which have, you know, key code locks on the door and probably their own security. And it's £150 an hour to get your kid tutored there. And they'll probably have a bodyguard or a nanny that takes them, that's there to watch them and look after them. It's a different world for those people. They don't understand how normal people live. They don't understand how heinous this attack was and how it's touched so many people, because so many people can empathize with what's gone on. And these politicians can't empathize. And yes, you know, the vigil for the little girls in Southport, it did turn violent. There was disorder at that vigil. And it did result in the wall of a mosque getting pushed down. When I say a wall, it was a little like garden wall outside the mosque. It wasn't like a major internal wall. You know, it was just a, you know, maybe a waist high wall. A portion of it got pushed over by protesters. But the fact that Keir Starmer and his cronies appeared more upset and more angry over that wall being pushed over than they did over those girls being killed was another massive ball of spit, you know, that went flying into the face of every white man who was already angry.
Cause I wanna bet. Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Wake up. Stop wasting your own time. Today, my friends, Americans are more pessimistic about the economy than they have been in a very long time. And it can be soul-crushing to work as hard as you possibly can, still not have enough money for all the bills. If you're feeling a tremendous amount of stress about your finances, you ain't alone. According to a recent survey, approximately half the entire population is struggling with mental health issues due to financial stress. 47% of adults say concerns about money have at least occasionally caused anxiety, stress, worrisome thoughts, loss of sleep, depression, or other effects. That according to Bankrate's latest money and mental health survey. Bankrate? Who in the hell is Bankrate? Call Kettle Moraine Limited today at 602-799-8214. 65% of the people say their biggest concern is inflation and rising prices, and nearly 60% say their stress derives from paying for everyday expenses such as groceries, utilities. 56% say they're worried about having enough emergency savings. 47% are most concerned about being in debt. I like the people that are worried about having enough emergency savings. That's another one of the reasons that you should have been buying gold and silver years ago. Stop worrying about what it's worth from day to day. It's up, it's down, it's inside out. You stop worrying about those things. You can call Kettle Moraine at 602-799-8214 for a private consultation. That's 602-799-8214. Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. Call Kettle Moraine Limited today at 602-799-8214. I think you're talking like a leech, you want everyone to act like you. Kiss ass, well, you're bitch, so you can get a rich, but the boss gets richer off you. Well, you'll work out of a guy in your back for a bowl of rice and a select your soul, just steal your soul.
With another massive ball of spit, you know, that went flying into the face of every white man who was already angry. And that's what it is.
Yeah.
The liberal elite running this country are spitting in the face of white people on a daily basis. And this was white people having enough. This was white people saying, F you, we're done. And years of being dispossessed, abused, treated as second-class citizens, it all came pouring out in one weekend of disorder. Now, just before you come in here and give your thoughts, I am not saying for one minute that I agree with violence. I don't. I think there was absolutely the need to protest at the weekend. However, I called for peaceful protest, for non-violent protest. I went on multiple shows talking about how people in this country, white people, need to adopt the kind of tactics that were employed by those who opposed the Vietnam War. Peaceful, non-violent resistance that essentially makes or shows the establishment up as the tyrannical monsters that they are. The minute you start rioting, unless you're black or from an ethnic minority background, you're on to a hiding. You know, white people just can't get away with that kind of stuff. And if you, you know, obviously, if you've got any more questions, hit me with them. But otherwise, we could talk about the government's response, because the government's response, you know, it's been so over the top and so condemning of those white protesters. Mm. I can tell you, it's almost as if, you know, if you, it's almost unbelievable that especially a Labour government would do this.
So. Yeah, and that Labour government, I mean, there's kind of an irony there, Labour, because you would think that the Labour Party, when it was founded, I guess, in the late 1800s or early 1900s, that these would have been the types of people that they would have been trying to represent. So I have two, I'm going to ask both questions right now. So the first is, you know, I had already asked you what was the messaging that the demonstrators were trying to put out. So the first question, the next question I want to ask is, how is the media and the government twisting or portraying the message of the protesters? Are they saying that these are protesters who have just had enough of mass immigration and multiculturalism, or are they saying something more sinister? And then also, I want to ask, I know, you know, Tommy Robinson is a big name in some circles, and some of the protesters are probably Tommy Robinson fans. What role does Tommy Robinson and his supporters have in what's going on?
Well, the government isn't saying there's any reason to this. The government is just keeps repeating the same thing again and again, that this is far right thuggery, that this is a plot by this sinister far right, you know, cabal who are sending people out onto the streets to bring Britain to its knees, which is absolutely false in every sense. What this was a spontaneous response to a horrific act which touched people in a much deeper way than previous events seem to have had. You know, as I said, we've had British soldiers, you know, beheaded on our streets, but this seems to have been something that really has caused a major, major, you know, sea change. But the government won't acknowledge any of the demands of protesters. The government at the moment is just hell-bent on repeating again and again, this is the far right, this is the far right, this is the far right thugs, far right agitators. You know, that is the only response that the government has managed to utter, because their narrative is essentially that things like this happen, that things like this attack happen, that this attack is essentially a tragedy, much in the same way that, you know, if there'd been high winds on the day, and the roof of the dance class had, you know, fallen in due to high winds, and three little girls had died, that would be a tragedy. This isn't something that is down to human beings. This isn't something that was down to choice. This is just one of these unavoidable tragedies, almost like a force of nature, almost as if, well, you know, these things occur. You have to expect them to occur. You know, there's always natural disasters. It's out of our hands. You know, we're all very sorry, but life moves on. And that's that. That is how the government have treated this. It hasn't been treated as if there's any sort of real worry or concern. And the government, despite Keir Starmer giving two press conferences, and at both of those press conferences, he has basically said that there's going to be a raft of new legislation, new laws.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Health Simple with Kalwara Shilaji, fact bit number 3. Shilaji is the supreme yoga vaha. Within Ayurveda, Shilaji is the singular substance that towers above all other herbs, herbal minerals, and earth-made adaptogens. Yoga vaha refers to substances that have the ability to synergistically make better and carry other substances to its prescribed destination. In the case of Shilaji, most any herb, food, or mineral is amplified with ionic potential, superimposing superior efficacy with increased cellular energy and absorption rates. One of the best applications for Shilaji is to add a drop or two into your favorite herbal tincture and foodstuff. Simply put, Shilaji makes other substances more effective.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Conferences. And at both of those press conferences, he has basically said that there's going to be a raft of new legislation, new laws, new police units, new methods to crack down on the far right. Starmer has not at any point even suggested that there will be a response to deal with what happened to the girls. So there hasn't, at this point, been any government response that indicates there will be any protection for girls in Southport or elsewhere. You know, when it comes down to it, this is one of these, you know, unavoidable organic tragedies that just happens. It just happened. And that is Starmer's point, and that's what he's sticking to. And he feels that the greater evil here is not the murder of young girls, it's the threat of the far right protesting and, you know, white people voicing mm-hmm. their opinions. And he's doubling down.
Okay, and Tommy Robinson, just because I hear his name mentioned, what's going on
there? Well, Tommy Robinson's an interesting one, because on the surface, Tommy Robinson wouldn't have had a problem with the murderer because he wasn't a Muslim. Tommy Robinson regularly speaks out in favor of mass immigration as long as it's not Muslim. Tommy Robinson's point is that fundamentally, multiculturalism does essentially work. It just doesn't work if you bring Islam into the equation. So Islam's like essentially the spoke in the wheel that derails our wonderful multicultural society. It's the spoke in the wheel. But, and this is the key. Once you introduce Islam, no one's singing Kumbaya anymore. No one's holding hands. No one's getting on with each other. They're just, you know, going to be at each other's throats because of Islam. But if you removed Islam, everything would be fine. So for him, this goes against his narrative. It goes against this idea that we can all work together as long as we get rid of Islam. In fact, this really, you know, vindicates my narrative, which is that fundamentally the problem is when you bring people in from all over the world, they do pose a threat. And I think that I've been saying this many times, especially on this show when we've talked about issues to do with knife crime, machete crime, etc. You know, at the moment, the papers love to remind us that every hour in Britain, there is a violent incident involving a machete. You know, and who's doing this? Well, it's mainly people they describe as youths. Well, when they use the term youths, what they're really talking about is blacks. They're talking about young black males, and they use the term youths to describe this. When they're talking about youth crime, it's young black males.
Hey, can I relate just a real quick story from my childhood? Yeah, sure. When I was a kid, we had these riots going on, Watts in 65, other, you know, the riots in 68. I'm not sure. This was like mid 60s, probably. I was a little boy, but I remember this, and I remember also it being told to me. So we'd watch news at night, and Walter Cronkite was always talking about youths, you know, youths were, or teenagers. It was teenagers, right? Teenagers are rioting. And so I saw this as a little kid on TV. And, you know, one day we went to the laundromat, and there was this old black man sitting in the corner. And I told my mother, there's a teenager over there, because I'd been conditioned that black meant teenager, because they are always talking about these teenagers rioting. And I'd look on the TV and I saw blacks. So I'm just saying that.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's been going on a long time. That's what you think here, that it's we call, it's always youths. It's always youths and youth crime. But these knife attacks, they're not driven by Muslims. They are driven by, these youths. Now, the interesting thing is, at the weekend, Muslims did get involved, though. There have been several areas of the country where Muslims have come out in force carrying weaponry, you know, swords, baseball bats, machetes, knives, what look like garden tools, you know, marauding through city centres. Now, what has Starmer said about them? Well, he said nothing, has he? He's not said they're going to be clamped down on. And when they turned up, armed to the teeth, what did the police say? The police said, please take your weapons back to the mosque. Please go back. You know, you know, you're not needed here. Please leave. Please go. Don't make things worse. Now, can you imagine if white people had turned up? Like, none of the white lads that I saw at any of these things, some of them were behaving violently, of course. I'm not denying that. But I didn't see anyone turning up, you know, with machetes or garden tools or baseball bats, etc. But these Muslims did. And there's been no coverage of that in the news. It's been all over social media. The Prime Minister hasn't bothered talking about that, because why would he? It doesn't fit his narrative. He probably thinks that those people were, you know, that was, you know, fine, because they were just going to defend themselves against the far right thugs. But we've seen Muslims in cars driving into protesters. Apparently that's self-defense now. Well, it wasn't self-defense for James Fields, was it? The narrative is crazy. And in one case, there was a Muslim who appeared to have thrown acid all over a protester who was actually, you know, sat on the ground with these big burn pads all over him, being treated for chemical burns after, you know, he'd had some corrosive substance thrown on him. So when you look at this and you look at actually what's occurring in Britain at the moment, it's not as simple as the media have said it. It's not far right thugs. There is widespread disorder, and that widespread disorder seems to be, you know, supported by far more people than ever before. This is definitely, it's not the straw that broke the camel's back. It's the bale of hay that broke the camel's back. You know, this is, you know, it's a big incident. But on top of this, there's been a lot of anti-white violence. You know, I've got footage on my Telegram page of white lads being this weekend beaten to the ground by Muslim gangs, hitting them with bats and planks of wood. You know, this is extremely violent, but the way the media, the press, and the government are talking about this is completely one-sided. And okay. The response is one-sided, the response is disproportionate. And the worst thing is, the response is coming from a man who, when BLM were rioting, he took the knee and released a message in solidarity with the black rioters. So Starmer, and people are calling him two-tier Keir now, because he basically supported the BLM riots, and he supported the smashing of statues, the vandalizing of monuments, you know, all of that. He completely supported that. But now he's apparently upset because white people are doing similar. Well, what kind of precedent does it set when your prime minister gets on his knee and praises black rioters, but then when white people do something, he's calling them for them to be jailed and the harshest possible sentences to be handed down?
Well, there's no place in Britain for people like that. There's a question I want to ask. So we are, you mentioned Keir Starmer, your new prime minister, who was brought into power by elections that we talked at great length about maybe 5 weeks ago. Elections where he got a almost two-thirds of the seats of the House of Parliament, even with only about one-third of the vote. There was another headline from that election, and that headline was the massive vote for the Reform Party of Nigel Farage, which only won five seats, including one for Nigel Farage, but did give him a much bigger podium than he would have otherwise had. What is he doing with his podium now?
Well, he's released a couple of very measured statements saying that, you know, the people doing this, they're not all far-right thugs, and that, you know, the government should be labelling them as such. And he's also said, you know, lots of normal people have very reasonable concerns, which have been completely ignored. And although he absolutely abhors violence, you know, the government has to take their fair share of the blame for this, or successive governments do, for, you know, largely ignoring the will of the people and allowing these atrocities to continue, you know, to keep happening. And at this point, I would say that he's playing things very, very carefully. He's not coming out there and, you know, agreeing with any form of disorder, but he is a very powerful voice who is within the mainstream now because he's elected to Parliament. And he is absolutely, you know, being a thorn in the side of the establishment, to the point where the establishment are saying, you know, that he is basically fueling this now. The establishment are saying that Nigel Farage is fueling this kind of behavior. And I would say Nigel Farage is looking at this and he's saying to himself, right, most of this disorder is happening in Labour areas. And in some of these Labour areas, Reform are already taking 30-something percent of the vote and coming second. Well, most of these whites who have been, you know, involved in this disorder, them and their families are not going to vote Labour again, because they're all going to be in serious trouble. The police is going to come. Police are going to come down on them like a ton of bricks. And he's going to be thinking to himself, well, look, Starmer's going to keep supporting the state of Israel. So in these Labour areas, a lot of these Muslims are not going to be voting for Labour anymore. And he's then going to be thinking, well, whites are, but now they're not going to want to. And if he's a clever man, which I believe he is, he will be thinking to himself, how can he and Reform benefit from this? And I believe if the general election was rerun tomorrow, he would be taking a lot more seats. I think Nigel Farage's party would probably come out with between 50 and 60 seats up and down the country.
Now, okay. Of course, there's not going to be an election tomorrow. I want to ask, what kind of permanent repercussions are going to come of this? I'm assuming it's not just that this is just going to simmer down and everything goes back to the way it was. This seems to be pretty big. So what kind of permanent repercussions? Will the government implement draconian measures, facial recognition technology, things like that? Will there, you know, you were talking about Nigel Farage. I don't know if there are any council seats or other elections, council elections coming up where, you know, Nigel Farage's forces can make an impact. What other types of things? Is this something that is going to move the Overton window on what can be discussed? And finally, Is anybody going to discuss why, you know, what forces have been behind pushing for mass immigration all along?
I think that it will have a lasting change. Now, a lot of people have said, Elon Musk has said, civil war is coming. You know, we're on the road to civil war. Now, I don't believe that particularly to be true. I don't think we are on the road to civil war. I think we're on the road to sectarianism. I think we're on the road to what we saw for years in Northern Ireland. But I think Britain will be chopped up into different areas, and there will be black areas, there'll be Muslim areas, there'll be major distrust, there will be more outbreaks of violence, there will be more interracial, interethnic rioting, interracial and interethnic violence, and all of that will be very, very similar to what we saw in Northern Ireland. And people say, well, look, Mark, what do you mean there's not going to be a race war? There's people out on the streets, you know, all this stuff's happening. How can you say that? Well, there was never a race war in South Africa. There was never an out-and-out war in Northern Ireland. You know, during the Troubles, there was separation, there was sectarianism, there was terrorism, sectarian violence, but there wasn't an actual war. And that's the big thing. The big thing is, unless there was a complete breakdown of state power and the police and the army all at the same time just said, look, we're downing tools. It's up to the people now. It's up to the people and the politicians to sort this out between them. At that point, there may well be an actual war. But unless the police and the army were willing to down tools, that isn't going to happen. And I think the likelihood of either the police or the army backing down and just saying, right, you know, we're all downing tools, it's the people versus the politicians, do as you wish, that isn't going to happen. And if that did happen, I think you would then see the balloon truly go up. But because the police are in the position they are today, and the military in the position they are, where they're the most advanced police and military that the world has ever known, and they're so technologically advanced and have so much so much power and violence concentrated in their hands, and their ability to do violence is so much greater than the average person's, it's foolish to believe that, you know, this will break, this will go to be something more. You know, people, there will be wishful thinking where people were saying, like, oh, you know, I told you it's all going to be a war in a few. It's not going to be like that. And it rarely does happen like that. You tend to have a period of separation. So I can imagine now white people living in Muslim areas would be getting very nervous and probably deciding to leave. You know, there will be a separation, along multiple different lines, racial, ethnic, and obviously whites now living in Muslim areas will have seen these gangs of Muslims patrolling their areas. They will be concerned about that. You know, would you like to be a lone white man living on a street full of Muslims, watching men walk down the street with swords? And this is only going to get worse because the Labour government want more of this. They fundamentally want more immigration. They want an amnesty for illegal immigrants living in Britain. Labour are basically going to turn that dial up to turbo. They're going to turn the migration dial, the multicultural dial, everything up to 11. And it's going to exacerbate the problem. And not only that, they will come down on white rioters very, very harshly. But people will be looking at this and saying, well, when black rioters dumped, you know, statues in rivers, when black rioters were caught, you know, desecrating memorials, etc., what was the actual comeback for those people? Well, the comeback was nothing. There was no comeback. There was no, I remember the people who destroyed the Colston statue in Bristol and dumped it into the river. What actually happened? I'll tell you what happened. Sweet FA, they got a conditional discharge. The judge let them off. So are any of these white rioters going to be let off? Well, of course they're not. You're going to have not just two-tier policing, but a two-tier judiciary. You know, the whole process is now, you know, skewed against white people, and specifically against white people who have any form of nationalistic or patriotic views. We are moving now towards a tyrannical situation where Keir Starmer is going to be the most Stalinesque, most communist-style dictator the UK has ever seen. And you're going to be in a position where people will be asking themselves whether it's better living in Britain or better living in North Korea.
Hey, I have a real quick question, because we don't have that much time. on that line of talking, so Keir Starmer, I mentioned he has almost two-thirds of the seats in the House of Commons. With that massive majority, does that give him ability to push through legislation that would otherwise have been thought unthinkable?
Yes.
Sur mon lit à bouffer, salant en buvant, prends mon whisky, quant à moi, peu dormi, vie, débris, mais j'ai dû dormir dans la gouttière où j'ai eu un flash. Wouhou! En quatre couleurs. Allez hop, un matin, une louloute est venue chez moi, poupée de cellophane, cheveux chinois, un sparadrap, une gueule de bois, a bu ma bière dans un grand verre en caoutchouc.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Hey there, this is Sheila with Hempaste by Mynutra. Why is hempaste better than other CBD options on the market? It's important to point out that the common CBD oil does not contain CBDA or CBGA, and they're only found in fresh or raw hemp products, like hempaste. Hempaste contains the entire plant, minus any stems. This means the product retains the complete genetic code of the plant, which also includes those two vital cannabinoids, CBGA and CBDA. Over and over, experts keep saying the more intact or less processed the hemp plant is, the more effective it is. Happy hemp paste.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org. And visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Call 855-656-8872. Mention RBN.
With that massive majority, does that give him ability to push through legislation that would otherwise have been thought unthinkable?
Yes, it does. And the reason I mentioned North Korea is because I'm not saying North Korea is a nice place to live. It's probably very cold, quite brutal. There are lots of blackouts, famine, etc. But one thing that would never happen in North Korea is if a black man moved to North Korea and went into a dance class attended by North Korean little girls and started stabbing those little girls, that black man would be hanging by the end of the week. He'd be hanging. And the leaders in North Korea would come out and say, this is, you know, terrible. They would likely call the day of mourning. There would be a completely different response, because I don't think, you know, the Kim Jong dynasty has done probably the best things at all times by the people of North Korea. But I don't think they would let migrants come in and slaughter North Korean little girls. No. That's the difference between these communist regimes, or sort of Putin's regime, or the Chinese regime. You know, if when you saw those horrible swarthy terrorists that killed all those people in the shopping mall, what did the Russian troops do when they caught them? They chopped one of their ears off and put it in his mouth. You know, they brutalized them. They made sure that the Russian people knew that the Russian government, the Russian security services, were on the side of Russian people, and that when foreigners entered Russia, if they did something like that, it was absolutely unacceptable. However, in Britain, it's the complete bloody opposite. If you've got a migrant enters Britain and kills British children, the British government is squarely on the side of the migrant community and really refuses to even condemn the murderous migrant who did the stabbing. Now, once you're starting to ask yourself the question as to whether North Korea's, you know, the North Korean government's response to something would be more in favor of the people than the British government's response, you know there's a fundamental problem afoot.
Plus, North Korea's got better music. It's just got better music. Anyway,
I'll take your word on that, Patrick.
Okay. So we're out of time, but finish whatever thought you have.
My thoughts are that I want these protests to go on, but I want things to be peaceful. We didn't get round to this, but I want white people to be as robust as they can over this matter. But if anyone's listening and considering doing anything foolish, please don't, because the government is going to come down on you like a ton of bricks. Obviously, I'll be back, God willing, next week to actually talk about this more with you. But my concern now is Starmer isn't just going to come down on people who are involved in violent disorder harshly, but I think he's going to bring in a raft of new laws which are going to take away the rights of every British person who wishes to talk about demographic change. This is going to transform. He is going to transform Britain into a place where people will say, look, this is, you know, this is like the worst period, the worst period of Soviet Russia. I think that is, you know, all the worst times of the Soviet Union. That's where Starmer's going to take us.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and we do look forward to hearing from you next week, and I hope everybody heeds your very sound advice and demonstrates, but does it peacefully and keeps their resolve. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Media Radio.
Hercules, hero of song and story, Hercules, winner of ancient glory, fighting for the right, fighting with his might, with the strength of 10 ordinary men. Hercules, people are safe when near him. Hercules, only the evil fear him. Softness in his eyes, iron in his thighs, virtue in his heart, fire in every part of the mighty Hercules.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You can't! can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.